changes the Board of Adjustment meeting times from 7:30 to 7. I didn't realise that was old business, but we'll talk about that. New business, the welcome of Don and the training session, and then an adjournment. Any questions on that?
Do we have any additional light?
Probably. Oh, yeah.
There you go.
There we go.
No, I don't need my glasses on. Okay, everyone happy with that? It's an agenda. Do we need a formally approved agenda?
Yes.
Okay. So we'd like to propose if the agenda's approved.
Have you read through it?
Yes, you just did.
You just did?
The agenda, not the minutes.
Just that's the, what I'm saying. Did you read through it?
The agenda?
Yes. No.
No, the minutes.
No, we're not up to the minutes yet. We're on the agenda.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. My apologies. No, you don't have to approve the agenda.
All right. Okay, that's approval of minutes. I'll give you everyone a... This is all new to everybody at the minute. A chance to look through those.
Do you have double pages, Dolores?
Yeah, I think I do. How
many copies you run off? Five? Four?
Just for the three of you.
How many are you supposed to
Peter?
Nine?
You're supposed to have 21 pages, I think, with your signature. But it stopped in the middle because it had to adjust color, so that's why you may have gotten double when it stopped in the middle.
Second.
Unless somebody's missing pages. Shout out if you are.
It isn't the same page.
I'm going to do something I don't like doing.
That is.
I'd like to make a motion to repass the minutes.
Second. Okay.
All in favour?
No. Okay.
That's the first and the last time I'll let it do something like that.
Okay, this old business to change time of the Board of Adjustment meetings from 7:30 to 7. How did that get on there? I know we changed it for today, but how did that?
Okay, we're going to discuss the hourly change, the hour meeting.
This is what you proposed?
I don't know who proposed it. Who made out the agenda?
Somebody mentioned it in the at the last meeting that they thought they wanted to change or think about changing the time.
Okay.
So that's why I put it on the agenda for
personally,
discussion.
I think it's a good idea. But what time is a comfortable time for a meeting?
Early as possible.
The reason I say that is because I don't like traveling at night. So the earlier where I can get here, the better I like it.
If you put it to 6, that's fine with me, or 6:30.
Yeah, I don't think we can.
Is 6 o'clock acceptable to you?
No, 7 o'clock's probably the earliest.
7 o'clock's about the earliest you tolerate.
Yeah.
It works for me.
Huh?
It works for me.
Okay. 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock.
Okay.
I make a motion we change our meeting schedule to 7 o'clock. Now, you realize what that entails?
Yes. I'll have to have the website changed, and we'll have to have a public notice.
But Nancy's just asked that question for June anyway.
Yeah. You'll have to have it advertised?
No, right.
And it'll have to be changed in the ordinance?
Yes.
Because the ordinance has that
right. And I'll have Nancy take care of that.
Okay. Did we get that seconded?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I think that's a good change. All right. Any other business we've got to deal with before you don't?
I'd like to deal with something. Getting the minutes like this and last minute. We have an option, rather than coming in, and I'm looking to save not only the town some money, because they don't have to print it out, but save us some money running down here to pick it up, all right? I think the easiest solution would be if everyone has a computer, email. Does everyone have a computer?
So everybody's good with
that. You send it out in the same manner as you did the agenda.
Right. Is there any reason we can't do it by email?
Oh, no, we can do that. And what I typically do is I'll have a watermark saying draft, and I'll email
that's
it to
beautiful.
You. And until I get, you know, everybody's approval, I won't print
correct.
It in a final form.
Right.
That'll be fine.
Okay.
That's fine with me.
Okay. That's fine. And I should have everybody's email.
Okay,
I'll just
I'm
make sure
motion
before you...
to that effect, then. Mm-hmm.
All future minutes... I send electronically by email. Yeah,
right.
But the agenda is already served. You're proposing a second?
Yes.
Do I say second? Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All in favour?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? All right. We welcome Don. Don is the General Director of Local Government Services for the Cakefield Council of Government, and he's here to help us with some training and give us some insight on how the Board of Adjustment operates and works. So, over to you.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here. I've got a handout here. It's a booklet, and the covers don't mean anything. It's just what we had left, to be honest with you. We're trying to recycle and reuse stuff. Some blue, some gray, and some...
Good deal.
So we're trying to...
Thank you.
We're like everybody else. Hang on for an extra one there.
Did you get one, Peter?
And this is a packet of information, and we'll go through it. I actually hope to go through all of it. Want to just tell you a little bit about myself, since y'all know a little bit about each other and don't know anything about me. I, obviously, as you can hear from my accent or lack thereof, I'm not a native of North Carolina. I grew up in northern Indiana. Been here since 1985, so that's 26 years. Married a woman that's a native of Shalom. I live in Shalom. My mother was from up north of Durham, so I'm trying to be a Native American, I guess. I don't know if I ever make it or not. But for about 14 years, I worked for the Brunswick County Planning Department. And for 2 years, I was a town planner in Oak Island and met the Council of Governments about 9.5 years. So that's some of my recent background. So that's me. What I like to do in these sessions is make them a what I would call interactive, discussion-based question-answer for a couple reasons or several reasons. One, I'm not sure I know exactly what's on your mind. Number two, you don't want to hear me talk for an hour and a half on number three. I can't talk for an hour and a half, so hopefully we'll have some good discussion as we go on. And I was chatting with somebody all earlier before we got going here. Typically, and I talked with Nancy and Josie, and she may have conveyed this to you, these sessions run about an hour and 15 minutes or so. So if we get to about 8:30 and we're still bailing on, we'll try to decide whether to cut it off or go on. So that's kind of what my target is, about an hour to hour and 15 minutes or so. That usually works pretty good. Got one question for you as a start. Starting with you, Ms. Cole, would you go around the room, and if you would, in just a few words, tell me, number one, how long you've been on the Board of Adjustment, number two, what you're looking for from this session?
I've only been on the board about 3 months.
Okay, so you're a rookie. Okay.
I'm a rookie.
Okay.
So any information that I learn out of this is a better day.
Okay, good. Sir?
Charlie Hull. I've been on the board for about 4 years. I'm planning and zoning for about 22 years.
Oh my gosh.
So 4 years. So, and I've been here for 55 years.
So you're a seasoned veteran, as they say.
Yes.
Okay, good.
So does that mean you're younger than me?
I don't quite know. I don't really think much about age.
Peter Bolshoff, I think I came onto the board the same time as you did, Charlie.
How long has it been?
I'm not sure. I was trying to work it out. I think it's about four. It's about 4 years.
Okay.
And I arrived in Curry Beach in 2004. So, and I also am on the marketing committee. What I'm hoping to get, I think what happens here in Curry Beach is that although we've got good group of people with the Board of Adjustment, we don't meet or hear cases that often.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for me, this is an opportunity to kind of, and you learn a lot when you hear a case. I mean, it's, and we don't do it that often. We need an opportunity on a regular basis just to kind of discuss
exactly
what we are and what we do.
Well, and that's a good point. I hope as we evolve here, that there is an opportunity for y'all to have a discussion amongst yourself about this, that, or the other. And I can kind of steer you along, but obviously during the meetings, you don't have a regular appearance or something. You don't have that opportunity to kind of sit back and discuss things in a casual way that you could in this setting. So, okay. And you, sir, how long have you been on the Planning Board of Adjustment?
I'm starting into my second year.
Okay.
And I was on the Stormwater Committee for 3 years. I've not on that committee anymore. And I'm also on John Batson's, the building inspector, his assessment team for disasters.
Oh, okay.
And we haven't had any business.
Good.
And,
good. That's good. I had the, I won't say it was a pleasure. I was the town planner in Ocala when Floyd came in 1999. And if you may recall, Oak Island was a merger of Yopon Beach and Castle Beach, and the towns consolidated in July of 99. Floyd came in September of 99, so it was pretty much chaos for a good while. And I like to forget those days because it was a pretty tough go dealing with storm damage and stuff. After Floyd, and I'll just mention one other thing. I was actually kind of forgot this. I was on the Board of Adjustment Shalom for four or five years. You mentioned y'all don't meet very often. How often do you meet in a given 12-month period, or in a
how many cases do we have?
Yeah.
If you're going to take an average, it's probably been about two a year.
That's what I was going to say.
Okay.
We had two cases at the last meeting, which is kind of really exceptional.
Yeah.
About two a year. Yeah.
I think the change in the level of activity is a result of us really cracking down on the use of variance and making a strict resolution of that subject so that people don't come in and play with emotions, because
right.
That's not what it's there for. Whether you like it or not,
right.
That's the way the law reads,
yeah.
That's the way it's applied.
Right. not the buddy system.
Correct.
Neighbors or whatever.
Right.
Because you only meet twice a year, I think it's difficult, obviously, to keep your skills up and to keep your interest up and to keep your keep in training. I know it would be for me, and certainly you don't want to meet every month, obviously, or maybe you do, but twice a year is not very often. You know, in some towns, the planning board acts as the board of adjustment. They actually are two separate bodies. I know one town I work with, Lake Waccamaw, that's the case.
It does not sound like a very good setup.
Well, it works for them. See, their board of adjustment only meets once or twice a year, and it works for them. Now, they've got a pretty strong chairman over there. It might work here, it might not work here. I'm not advocating that, I'm just suggesting that.
This is why I said that, Don, is because you might have a conflict of interest when it comes to it, the interpretation of the zoning as a result. And that's one of the things I got to continually face, because a good part of the zoning, or the way it used to be, was initiated while I was on.
Right.
And you have to get out of your mind that I can't support that just because I supported it then.
Right.
Because if the wording doesn't fit the description the way it should, you got to rule against it, whether you like it or not.
Right. So. Yeah, I can understand that. I think in some cases, if you were involved in the drafting and adoption of a particular zoning ordinance thing back years ago, to some degree you might feel like you've got ownership of it. And you really don't. But anyway, what I want to do is go through the general statutes that that enable board of adjustments a little bit, and touch on the town ordinance that set up the board of adjustments. And then we've got several case studies to go through, and then I've got kind of a checklist of things to talk about. So let's turn to. It's page, that's number page one of this page. It's really the third page back. You've got the cover page of the agenda. The third page is the North Carolina General Statute. The North Carolina state law sets up the parameters and guidelines and standards for boards of adjustment. And I guess for your benefit, Ms. Coe, everything that a board of adjustment can do is outlined in the state law. It's pretty prescriptive, and I can put you at ease. I'm not going to read through all this, but I did highlight several things I want to touch on. At the bottom of page one there. Now I'm going to read this. It's not very long. The zoning ordinance may provide that the board of adjustment may permit special exceptions to the zoning regulations in specified cases or situations and so forth. Not including variances and permitted uses, and that the board may use special conditional use permits, all in accordance with the principles, conditions, safeguards, and procedures specified in the ordinance. Does the town zoning ordinance, or let me ask it this way, do y'all get involved in special conditional use permits or special exceptions?
Yeah, not to this point.
Okay.
I seriously think at some point in the not too distant future we will.
Okay. But if there is a conditional use applied for, does that go to the planning board or to the council, or how is that done, or have you even had any?
You mean the special use permit?
Right.
If it's a special use permit, a request, it'd go to the planning and zoning board.
Okay. That's fine. It's done two different ways. In some cases, some situations, it goes to the board of adjustment, but in most cases, it does go to the planning board. So y'all can forget about conditional use permits, because you don't really get involved in it. The next
spot, excuse me, Doug. Yeah. Let me hold it there for a second.
Yeah.
I think there's a real serious problem with special use, because you may wind up applying it so that it becomes, spot zoning. And that presents a problem.
Well, it could. You said you may. You may wind up applying it. I think, and of course, every case is different. Let me throw this out as a devil's advocate. Spot zoning. What is spot zoning? What do y'all think spot zoning is? Have you ever thought about that? What spot zoning is?
What do I say?
Well, let's hear what it's for.
Say we can change a certain area or piece of land, right. Change the zoning around that particular property, everything else remains in the same zoning.
Okay. That's a pretty standard definition. Usually, typically, people think of spot zoning as you've got let's say back here somewhere, you've got one little lot on a corner zone commercial and everything around is single family residential. That's a pretty standard notion of what spot zoning is. Let me be the devil's advocate here and say that spot zoning is not always bad. Now, you may think I'm crazy, but there are some cases where what you think is spot zoning is not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, back about 2005, 2006, the General Assembly adopted a law that defined what they call a small area zoning. What that is, you have to justify it, but it's not the worst thing in the world. But let me get back to you. I'm already wandering here. Let me get back to conditional use permits. I don't know, and I won't try to belabor this too much. Let me back up. A conditional use permit could be what you call spot zoning, but if it's an allowable use in a particular zoning district, I don't know the
general. Would
be spot zoning. Does that make any sense? I'm kind of talking in general.
Here's the problem I think you have with special use. It needs to have clear and distinct guidelines.
Right.
As to where what it is applied to. And if it doesn't have those guidelines,
right.
Then it cannot be utilized as special use. The problem is almost everything that I've ever looked at for special use is so generalized that for all intents and purposes, you could wind up using it for spot zoning. You could wind up having spot zoning.
Well, you could. You could.
Then it becomes a political thing.
It could be. Let's move on, and we may come back to that. On page 2, paragraph D, the practical difficulties or unnecessary hardships would result from the carrying out of the strict letter of the zoning ordinance, the Board of Adjustment shall have the power to vary or modify any regulations or provisions of this ordinance, so that the spirit of the ordinance shall be observed, public safety, welfare, security, and so forth, and substantial justice done. No change of permitted uses may be authorized by variance. Appropriate conditions which must be reasonably related to conditions and circumstances that give rise to the need for variance may be imposed on any approval issued by the board. This really gets at the heart, and I'm speaking, I guess, to you, Ms. Colvin, this gets to the heart of what the Board of Adjustment spends most of their time on. Of course, there are several key words in this paragraph, and we'll get to this later. Unnecessary hardship. What is an unnecessary hardship? What is an unnecessary hardship?
Well, I think you would find that if it was an unusual shaped lot that may have setbacks that would, might cause
right.
the person building a structure, his residence more than likely,
right.
Some hardship. So with that, the board could make some special circumstances because of the way the lot was broken out
yeah.
or whatever. It's,
that's a fairly common request, and I don't know what hang on a second. I don't know what typically you have happened here, but often you'll have a lot that's maybe a pie-shaped lot, or it's a little narrow on one end. I guess they call those trapezoids, I don't know. That you only have 4 feet on the side yard or something. That's a fairly common kind of thing.
I can see where you would have it. For example, if you have someone with a handicapped child or parent, or where they need some special, or, you know, exception to the sidewalk or something like that.
Fairly common. It's interesting you mentioned that. A fairly common request is, I guess they're still called handicap ramps. I can't think of a better term, but it's not necessarily politically correct. But the ramps that go up the front stairway, if they're in the front yard, they're going to be in the front setback. Some towns, I know Oak Island did this, made that a conditional use permit. You could put a handicap ramp in your front yard without it being a variance, had you have a conditional use permit in that zoning district. And they almost always granted them because of the nature of the situation.
Well, in another case here, we probably don't have, except in this area over here, we have a lower built structures, but most of them are elevated homes on pylons. You may have to provide a setback or some conditional approval for an elevator or right. something. That's probably what you're going to see more commonly here.
Yeah.
And you can, if this is a handicapped person, they need an elevator and it goes over to the setbacks off of the side yard or whatever, you got to use good judgment there.
Well, you do. You know, I tend to think of more of adjustments as kind of an escape valve in a way. Charlie, you had your hand.
Yeah. A variance stays with the property, regardless of who owns it, once you grant that variance.
Right.
A conditional use does not necessarily stay with the property, correct or incorrect?
I would say that's incorrect.
Incorrect?
Then you have a problem.
Why is that?
You're granting a conditional use for a specific reason. If that reason changes in the future, that property should, as far as I'm concerned, go back to its original intent.
Well,
yay or nay?
Well,
depends on the situation.
Hypothetically, putt-putt or miniature golf is a conditional use in the C1 or B1 zone, and I get one approved over here on the main street and start operating my miniature golf and decide to sell it. Does the conditional use go away?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I understand where you're coming from when you look. Okay. You've created a condition for a continuation of the conditional use. That's acceptable.
Right.
Let's get back to my example.
Okay.
You have a residence.
Right.
And you apply a conditional use for a ramp, handicap ramp. The person moves out, the people that move in are perfectly physically able to function without that handicap.
Right. Well, I think, and I understand why you bring your head with that.
What do you categorize that
well,
as?
Well, I always reserve the right to change my mind. That sometimes my first answer is not my best answer. I tell my wife that some days. I think in that case, if the town granted a conditional use permit for a handicap ramp, one of the conditions could be that if and when that person no longer resides there, the ramp needs to be taken up. That's a fairly reasonable thing to think about, I think.
You would still call it a conditional use.
You could, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, let's get back to your golf course, because this is an interesting one.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
You got your miniature golf course out there, and you're giving that a conditional use, and it is not applicable to that particular district.
Okay. But as a conditional use it is, though, and say if he was...
Here's my problem. It's the same problem I have with special use. What guidance do you use so that it does not become a political situation, that conditional use is rational?
Well, typically, let me, two things here, or at least two things. Conditional use permits and special use permits are essentially the same thing. I don't know how your ordinance addresses it or what they call it, but they're essentially the same thing. But to get to your question, in a miniature golf course, for example, some of the conditions that the town council or the planning board or council might put on that conditional use permit would be that, one, they can't have loud music. Two, they have to close at 9 or 10 or 11 or whatever time. Three, they have to keep the litter up. Four, they can only have parking, can have parking in the back or the front or whatever. And signage and lighting has to be in a certain way. Those are typically the kinds of conditions you would put on a golf course. So that's, I'm just railing off some things there. But if they failed to meet one of those conditions, you know, let's say they had a lot of noise and bands and kids out there drinking and stuff, they could lose their conditional use permit.
So it has that parameter. When it's conditional.
Yeah, usually there's a list of things that the planning board or council can choose from. That's why they're called conditional use permits. You have if you do these things, if you meet these conditions, we'll give you a permit.
Yeah, well, one thing also, you mentioned about changing hands or changing ownership. Is in the ones I've been involved in, when it changed ownership to a new owner, that still applies as long as the owner doesn't go in there and alter and say,
right.
I'm putting up a restaurant.
Yeah.
Because you can't alter that. It has to still be operated in the same parameters it was issued.
Exactly. He has to meet the same conditions that his the previous owner did as far as building and all that stuff. If he wants to alter that, he has to come back to the town for modification or change of that.
I give you a real... live example. During Hurricane Katrina, we were hired by GE Leasing to go to Louisiana, New Orleans, and erect temporary moors. And we were there, and we had to file for special use because they had this property, and we were erecting temporary moor facilities, for that. So they gave a special use in the city of New Orleans for this piece of property to do this, and it was parameters, and it was for specific use for a time, once they figured out what they were going to do. We had to, it had limits, but it also had some flexibility built into it to, because they didn't know at the time.
We do, yeah. That would be an interesting process. I don't know, something obviously more temporary work is something you don't like to think about, but certainly something I guess the Division of Emergency Management here, mm-hmm. the county emergency management people have considered, because it's just a fact of.
Well, it's part of their their planning for emergencies. They contracted through GE Leasing to GE Leasing would find the appropriate resources to go in and fund it, and that they would get funded. But GE Leasing handles a lot of that stuff.
Interesting. Let's move on. And we're almost done with this section. The concurrent vote of 4/5 of the members of the board shall be necessary to reverse any order, requirement, decision, or determination of any administrator official charged with the enforcement of ordinance adopted in this part, or to sign in favor of an applicant, or to grant a variance, is basically what that says. So you need a 4/5 vote. And then they're talking about two things. One, a appealing the decision of your zoning enforcement officer, that's where, I guess, your building inspector acted as your house.
Yes, yes.
That's where he says, no, you can't do it. And I say, yes, I think I can. The ordinance says I can. You have, the applicant, not in this case me, has the right to come to the Board of Adjustments and appeal the administrative officer's decision. That's what that's about. That doesn't happen very often. That rarely will a dispute get that far along. And I, have you all had any?
That's most of what we do.
Yeah, so what we do.
Interesting, okay. Well, I've learned something about it. But so, for example, let me give you an example. I want to open up a widget shop in the B1 or C1 zone, and widget shops aren't exactly listed in your list of permitted uses. Widgets are a retail operation, but you've got things real similar to widget shops, and your zoning code enforcement person says you can't do it. I said, but it's almost like this thing. I think I can. I can come to y'all to get it.
Don, we have to come. Yeah. We've got, what we do is we zone by SIC, standard industrial classification.
Right.
And in most cases, what we have done is we have taken the SIC number that applies to a district, and allowed those cases that either were there or that we thought did not find objectionable to the community as far as transportation and so forth. Mm-hmm. And that's done. And our ordinance clearly says if it's not expressly permitted, it is prohibited.
Right.
So that's it.
Right.
Okay. And that tends to be what happens in a lot of our cases, is that the ordinance is fairly clear and so the Board of Adjustment's role is just to reinterpret the ordinance for them, which is pretty much the same as what the building inspector would interpret.
Yeah. Well, one of the challenges in when you list a whole bunch of permitted uses is you're just never going to catch everything. There's always something new coming along. And I remember several years ago.
Does it have a SIC number?
Well, it did that. This is before we didn't use the SIC number. We didn't use SIC. You know, tattoo parlors. They popped up all over the place. Nobody really knew what to do with them. A lot of towns didn't like them because they didn't like tattoos. Didn't like the clientele and all this stuff. You know, but when you look at them as a land use, they're fairly innocent. They don't have a whole lot of traffic. They're not really that big a deal. But we have to deal with tattoo parlors, and that's just one thing. But they have this negative connotation. And the point is, when you list a bunch of permitted uses, that sometimes things are going to come along with the touch. You're just not going to catch. Finally, on E1, and this is fairly important. A member of the board or any other body exercising quasi-judicial functions pursuant to this article shall not participate in or vote in any quasi-judicial matter in a manner that would violate the affected person's constitutional rights to partial decision maker. Impermissible conflicts include, but are not limited to, having a fixed opinion prior to the hearing on the matter that is not susceptible to change, undisclosed ex parte communication, close familial business or other association relationship with the affected person or financial interest in the outcome of the matter. That's a fancy way of saying if you've got a conflict of interest, you shouldn't participate. Now, what that means is that, let's say, Peter, your brother, this is just a high, I'm not picking, just a high situation, your brother owns a lot down here next to wherever, and the neighbors applied for a variance. Your brother gets a letter from the town, and calls you up, just giving you all kinds of grief over it. You really shouldn't be talking with a guy. He's going to bend your ear anyway. You really don't need to have a conversation with him. Or the other thing along those lines, you guys, whatever you do, don't meet down at Hardee's the night before the meeting and discuss what you're going to do. That is a definite no-no. It's unethical, it's illegal, and it's just not the way to do it. You call Peter and say, what do you think about that case? Tomorrow night's agenda. He's the guy that did some work on our house, and I just didn't like what he did, so I'm going to vote against him. And you really don't know the facts of the case yet. Now, that's a hypothetical extreme situation. Or the other thing is that you're a half owner in the property that's up for a variance request. You own a third of it. You and two buddies have bought a lot down here, and he's going to apply for variance. You don't need to be involved in that. Now, on the other hand, if BP is coming here and wants to put a convenience store, and they need a variance, and you own two shares of BP stock, that's probably not a conflict of interest, because whatever you decide is not going to influence that two little shares of BP stock one way or the other, or whatever. You
still should be disclosed, though.
Yeah, well,
definitely. It should be disclosed. Because if somebody wants to make hay on that thing, and you don't disclose it, you're going to have a problem. And, Don, I'm going to say something here. If you still have enough for quorums, I don't know how you'd react, but if I have stock in the company, I would say I could operate fairly, but to play on the safe side, I'm going to.
Well, you could, so that you have that priority, but if you've got, let's say you've got a mutual fund and you've got, I don't know.
You're talking about a mutual fund.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a specific
fund. Yeah, but if you've got, I don't know, back in the day you had $300,000 worth of BP stock, you that's clearly potential there, or you own part of the Scotchman company and they're going to come in here, that's clear. But if you've got two shares and a mutual fund and there's 11 dozen shares and all that buy and sell, you got two shares, and what you do that night is not going to make a hill of beans of difference. So those are kind of the highlights on the general statutes. Really give you guys the marching orders to do what you can do. There's some other things in there that we will not go through. But does anybody have any questions or comments before we go?
Well, you were speaking about ethical behaviors and conflicts of interest. I mean, for me, I'm a licensed general contractor, mechanical contractor, refrigeration in multiple states.
Right.
And I'm bound by laws of those states, including this one, to uphold the laws of those states, just like John Batson is.
Right.
I mean, I have to interpret codes. I have to, you have to serve the public and the health and safety, and not do crap at work, and all these things. And so for me, it's ethical, and it's you know when you pay for your license every year, and they issue that license. I mean, you're bound to do what they told you needed to do by code.
So you are, and I think most, and certainly I don't know you all that well, but I think most of us, most of the time, knows what the right thing to do is. Now, do we always do the right thing? Well, of course we don't. We make errors in judgment. We don't think the process all the way through. We make shortcuts, but we are bound to do the right thing and certainly uphold the state.
As a contractor, you're bound to uphold those, but you're only bound to uphold them to the minimum standards of the code, which in some cases they become gray areas of making shortcuts and can cause issues and hardships for people. So that's where the gray areas, a building inspector says this is not going to fly, and then that can cause things to come to the Board of Adjustments. But still, you have to do the right thing for what the code says.
Yeah.
And where we get into the conflicts is where the gray areas come up, whether it's a zoning or, you know, a variance or something about this conflict that we have to use good sense and common sense on.
Well, of course, you know, the thing is, common sense means different things to different people. You, but the interpretation is a very difficult thing sometimes because the English language, as wonderful it is, different words mean different things to different people at different times. One of the things I do a good bit of is helping towns draft and adopt zoning ordinances or amendments to zoning ordinances, where you write and or rewrite the text of the zoning ordinance. And, you know, I use my best judgment. The planning board looks at it and says, yeah, that's fine. The council says, yeah, that looks good. And 6 months later, we'll look back and somebody will come up and say, what were we thinking about? I know everybody probably read into that. Things that seem good at the time, given a different context, aren't always so good. And the English language, as wonderful it is, can be real tricky sometimes. My wife is a former journalist, and so she kind of picks it. I think it's a newspaper sometimes, because it can be tricky.
But with the Board of Adjustments, they're